China goes to the WTO and the plunge in Russian currencies. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Today, China took its first step in making a World Trade Organization complaint about U.S. tariffs on steel and aluminum. The tariffs exempt a number of countries, but not China. The BBC's Andrew Walker reports.
When a WTO member country wants to make a complaint that another has broken the organisation's rules, the first stage is to ask for consultations. China has now taken that step in relation to the new tariffs of 25% on steel and 10% on aluminium that it and some other countries now face when selling the metals to the US. If the consultations don't resolve the dispute, then China will be able to ask for a panel to rule on the tariffs. Ultimately, if a country is told that its actions breach the rules, the WTO panel can authorise the other nation to retaliate. In London, I'm the BBC's Andrew Walker for Marketplace.
Well, the move comes a few hours after President Xi said he'd open China's auto and banking industries and reduce car import tariffs. Arthur Krober is founding partner of Gavical Dragonomics. It's a China-focused research consultancy in Beijing. He says President Xi's promises aren't so meaningful.
We've had some indications from Chinese financial officials that they're willing over the next 2 years to significantly raise the foreign ownership caps on many types of financial enterprises. But this is a lot less meaningful than it would have been, say, 10 or 15 years ago, because the Chinese financial sector is now so dominated by large firms that, you know, it's going to be pretty hard for newcomers to get a toehold.
Do you think this is going to prompt more action from the White House?
You know, I don't think it needed Trump to unleash tariffs to get Xi Jinping to reiterate these talking points, because that's been clearly part of the Chinese strategy for the last 18 months. I think the question basically is, do we have U.S. and Chinese negotiators working behind the scenes to try and cut some kind of a deal that will satisfy both sides? Or are we more in a situation where both sides are entrenched? And I think we're more in the latter.
Arthur Krober, let's do the numbers. Global markets are trading higher using Xi Jinping's speech to take a bit more risk. Hong Kong's Hang Seng ended up more than 1.5%. Germany's DAX is leading European shares up, climbing nearly 1%. Now, Russia's currency, the ruble, has lost a further 5% today after yesterday's 4% drop. It seems U.S. sanctions on a group of Russian tycoons are beginning to bite. Jeremy Cook is with World First Economics.
If you limit a large economy's ability to trade in the US dollar, then you drastically stifle their ability to grow, to trade, and to obviously pay down debt as well.
Does this affect ordinary Russians?
While Russia is very rich in some agricultural stores like wheat, in other places like fruit and milk and meat, a lot of that has to be imported. So if they are importing it from elsewhere with a devalued ruble, obviously you'd expect that to flow through into prices, and therefore the average Russian, while these sanctions are targeted at the very, very rich, the oligarchs and the administration, eventually ordinary Russians will pay the price as well.
And what do you think the longer term implications of this are?
Central banks are more likely to have to step in to protect their currencies. We haven't seen anything from the Russian central bank yet, and the falls are a symptom of that. In the longer term, for the businesses and consumers within the Russian economy, it means that their bargaining and their buying power has obviously diminished. And we may see, obviously, consumption fall off a cliff as people sit there and say, I can't afford to spend any money. I don't know whether we're going to be employed in 3 months' time, and therefore savings pick up in Russia as well.
Jeremy Cook. Europe's top court said today France can bring criminal proceedings against Uber because it used unlicensed drivers for the now suspended Uber Pop service. Uber's faced problems in many cities, not least Barcelona in Spain. The BBC's Guy Hedgecoe reports.
After 4 years' absence, Uber is back in Barcelona. The company says its new service in the city complies with local regulations, which were a problem for it in the past. In Spain, there's a cap on the number of licenses available for private hire vehicles, or PHVs, like those used by Uber. Only one PHV license is issued for every 30 taxis in circulation. Carlos Lloret, general manager for the company in Southwest Europe, admits that the regulations are strict.
Spain has historically had probably one of the most restrictive regulations in Europe. And I would say Barcelona has the same regulatory context as the rest of the country of Spain.
But not everyone is celebrating Uber's return to Barcelona. Taxi drivers complain that the employees of Uber and other digital firms drive around fishing for clients instead of waiting to be hailed via their online apps. Barcelona's taxi industry has been particularly united against the likes of Uber. Mass demonstrations have sought to pressure the authorities into keeping these digital companies out of their city. The figurehead of the anti-Uber movement in Barcelona is Alberto Álvarez.
We may be afraid of losing what we have, but we're not afraid of Uber. Never. In Barcelona, they're going to have to sweat blood if they want to come here and ruin us. Without a doubt, it's going to be the worst city for them, because here we're convinced that their days are numbered.
Uber says it respects local laws and that there's enough room for its drivers and the 10,000 taxis already on Barcelona's streets. But there have been clashes between drivers working for the digital firms and taxi drivers who have promised a wave of protests. In Barcelona, I'm the BBC's Guy Hedgeco for Marketplace.
Hey, check out our podcast wherever you get yours. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.